Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the CONCACAF Champions League Review Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another special edition of the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show, the CONCACAF Champions League 2015-16 Group Stage Week 2 Review Show, as we talk about those teams in both Major League Soccer and Liga MX in their CONCACAF Champions League matches. First of all, I've been assured by Blog Talk Radio that these issues will end today. Very happy that these problems have been dealt with, and I apologize for what happened on Monday. So what we'll do on Monday is we'll just rediscuss a few things that have happened today. Strange things have happened today already in the North American Soccer League, but we'll discuss that on Monday, and then we will continue on with at least reviewing the 3-0 victory by the New York Red Bulls over against Toronto FC at Red Bull Arena last Saturday. But other than that, I want to talk about the Champions League right now. And obviously, it looks like we're getting some pretty interesting matches. Talk about interesting matches. My God, that ending between the Seattle Sounders and Olimpia from Honduras. You know, you just got to say, when you see these games and you never think it's going to be that exciting. You think it's going to be a dull match. Nothing exciting is going to happen. And then all of a sudden, here comes the Sounders. And just a lot of shenanigans going on over there, over at CenturyLink Field. And, of course, we'll have Dave Clark from Sounder at Heart calling in to talk about those moments. It's just been absolutely unbelievable what happened there. And I just, to be honest with you, I couldn't believe what happened towards the end. But you just got to say that for the Sounders, I thought they deserved the win. I thought the way that it was being played, I thought they deserved the win. They deserved to go out there and get 3 points after conceding that early goal. Arabe Unido, I have to give them credit for actually playing a game. Because, you know, I just have to say that when you watch this club, Arabe Unido, the last couple of years, this Panamanian side, and obviously they have plenty of talented players, on their roster. And you would always see them flop. You will always see them dive. You will always see them just go so much overboard on the gamesmanship. It just got so tiresome. You just couldn't do it anymore. And now we're seeing them actually playing the game. They're actually playing the game, and they're actually doing something well. Now, obviously, a late goal happened on them from DC, but still, though, I just want to give them credit where credit is due, because very simple, the situation is that they just kept on flopping. You just, you know, kept on flopping, and it's just a situation where you have to assume that they don't want to win a game. They just feel like that, you know, if they keep on getting calls for diving or flopping, that it's just going to be enough for them to win a match or at least get any form of points. You know, they have talented players. They don't have to do that sort of stuff. And it's just a situation where I would like you want them to stop it. And thankfully, they have. Thankfully, they have stopped. Thankfully, they are playing what they should be playing. Playing football, playing soccer the way it has to be done. Because I'm telling you right now, if they continue on to keep on, you know, flopping and diving, you know, CONCACAF, their Champions League committee, you know, they're going to have to throw some sanctions out there. They have to throw some sanctions on Arabe Unido because it's a continuation of just bad playing, bad very, very bad playing that you don't want. Because it makes them look bad, it makes the Panamanian Football Federation bad, and it makes the entire region of CONCACAF looking bad. We can't have Arabe Unido to continue diving. They haven't. They've stopped. It looks a lot better. But the truth of the matter is this, is that we cannot have Arabe Unido just continue to dive all over the place. Or else CONCACAF's going to have to make some sanctions here. And it's just absolutely a complete disgrace when that happens. It's absolutely a complete disgrace when that happens. Because we just cannot keep seeing this happen all the time. It looks like a bunch of fifth graders trying to get attention for no reason. So all I can say is that I'm glad Arabe Unido has stopped the diving like every single play, every single tackle. I'm just very glad that stopped. Other parts of the CONCACAF Champions League, as we take a look, obviously Deportivo Saprissa and of Costa Rica and Santos Laguna of Costa Rica, Deportivo Saprissa, Costa Rica, and of course Santos Laguna of Mexico. They both have eliminated W Connection. I mean, two losses already for W Connection, and they're both 4-goal deficits. It's a -8 on the differential. They're in dead last. I know they got two more matches at home against Deportivo Saprissa and Santos Laguna, but the truth of the matter is that's dead and buried. They're already eliminated. It's already over. They have two more matches to go. Obviously, week three will be Saprissa and Santos Laguna. We'll see what happens over in Costa Rica. But I got to be honest with you. This is completely dead and buried once again. The Trinidad and Tobago club are gone. Isidro Metapan already gone against both Herediano of Costa Rica and Tigres of Mexico. Galaxy already on the front foot with 6 points. And they have already faced their opponents twice at home. They are already, I think they are already on their way to go into the quarterfinals and the knockout stage. Obviously, they got to be on the road. We'll see what happens. But the Galaxy, I think it's already done and dusted. It's already over. I don't see them losing these games on the road. I mean, if you get a draw, you get a draw. And that's fine. But, you know, Comunicaciones, Central FC, it's just going to be that see who's going to finish second in this group. So we'll see what happens there. You know, Club America also leading their group to win, 6 points already. A 4-0 destruction on Motagua of Honduras. And then, of course, they defeat the Nicaraguan club, Walter Ferretti. We'll have, once again, John Jagu will be joining us to talk about those clubs in the Liga MX. And we'll just have to talk some more about what's been going on. But how about Querétaro from Mexico? This is a club that I'm not familiar with. And, of course, once again, John Jagu will be joining us, and he'll discuss that with us, talking about this club that I think... This is the club that had Senviso, who was playing for them, at that whole situation with that whole thing with Vancouver Whitecaps. Of course, you know, he signed a contract while he was under contract. So we'll see what happens. But it's just a situation where the point is that, you know, they are looking okay. They're undefeated currently. And it's a situation where but all I can say is that some of these clubs are looking really solid so far. And just to see Municipal, of course, you see Carlos Ruiz. It's just a situation where with Carlos Ruiz over at Municipal. It doesn't look like he's going to do much at all for his club down in Guatemala. I just don't see Municipal doing anything at all. And it's just one of those things where it's either going to be Santa Tecla or Salt Lake. Of course, Salt Lake hasn't played their second game yet, and that'll be week three. I should say week four on the road in September. So it's going to be interesting. The one thing is interesting to me, though, is this, is that when you're seeing the schedule being made for both the Seattle Sounders and for DC United in their respective groups, it's a situation where, wow, we're getting rid of all these games right off the bat, aren't we? I know Arabi Unido took on Montego Bay first in early August, but the point is that DC United played their game this week. Next week, they'll be at home against Montego Bay, and then you get to September in those matches. They will be at home against Arabi Unido. Then they go to Jamaica on September the 22nd, and then that's the end of it, and DC's done. Look at Seattle. They've already were at Vancouver. They played at home against Seattle this week. Now they got to go. Seattle has to play this. They played this week, Seattle, against Olympia. Now they got to go down to Honduras next week. And then they don't have to play till September 23rd, and then they're done, and it's all Vancouver. And we'll see what happens. But and then, of course, you have the Whitecaps. They're going to get the next three games. They're going to get both games in September. They'll get the last game in October. So depending on what happens, I mean, right now the draw is keeping them alive, Vancouver. What's going to happen when, you know, the Whitecaps are going to host Olympia and then they got to go to Seattle? I mean, are they going to get a draw there too? Because that would be interesting to see if the Sounders and the Whitecaps will draw at CenturyLink Field on September 23rd. There's a lot of questions that are going to be asked here in this CONCACAF Champions League. A lot of stuff that we don't know what's going to happen. And all I can say is it's going to be exciting. It's going to be interesting because we have a lot of fun and excitement with these CONCACAF Champions League matches because they're so unpredictable. I mean, the way that the Sounders fought back after allowing that goal early on against Olympia, and then here they come. They're still fighting. They're still pouring it on. Yeah, there's been a little shenanigans here and there from Olympia, but the truth of the matter is this, is that Seattle found a way to come back and get a win. DC United found a way to get 3 points on the road down in Panama. And then we're going to see what's going to happen when we get Real Salt Lake going. And then we're going to also see what's going to happen with the Galaxy. Well, you really don't have to see what's going to happen with the Galaxy. Galaxy are up 10 goals to 1 on their differential. It's a plus 9 right now for the LA Galaxy. To be honest with you, the Galaxy is more in cruise control than I would say the other sides right now. But the Sounders are looking pretty solid. DC United gets a good opening match on the road. Same thing with Salt Lake. They had a decent opening match on the road down at Guatemala at Municipal. And now it's all about the meat and potatoes. It's all about these middle matches. What's going to happen? How's it going to play out? What are they going to do? You know, will we see better matches from our MLS sides, including Vancouver? We got to see what the Whitecaps are going to have to do as they represent Canada. And I think so far they had a decent opener against Seattle over at BC Place. But now we're going to have to see what they're going to do with those matches against Olympia before, you know, in between the final match against the Sounders at CenturyLink. So it's just one of those things we're just going to have to wait for. We're going to have to see what the situation will be. And all I can say is that it should be very interesting. Now, here's we go, folks. Great show for you tonight. Dave Clark from Sounder at Heart will be joining us. We won't have on Adam Serrano from the LA Galaxy Insider, so I'll just review the match myself to have John Jagu talking about Liga MX clubs. But joining me first, of course, my good friend Robert Hay Jr. from World Soccer Talk, talking about DC United's first win in this group stage against Arabi Unido. Robert, thanks for joining me. How are you tonight?
No problem, buddy. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. So far, so good. So let me ask you this. Before we talk about the match in its entirety, that was probably one of the better goals I've seen DC score in the group stage of the CONCACAF Champions League. I mean, we all know Arabia Unido is a tough opponent. In the past, they've been known to do the Greg Louganis, if you know what I mean. But I thought for once, I really thought for once they played a very good match and they actually, shall I say, behaved themselves. But still, that was a great goal scored from DC United, as I believe it is your new guy that you brought over there, Miguel Aguilar. That was a great toe poke that he just got it right through the keeper.
Yeah, not exactly. DC United is not exactly known for its pretty goals and you know, that kind of creativity. But you know, I think this is a long time coming from Miguel Aguilar. He's someone that brings a little bit of a creative spark to the DC United midfield. He came out of, I believe it was UCLA in the college draft this year, and he, you know, he hasn't been getting a ton of starting time and you know, going a full match. It's been a lot of time off the bench and such, but. I think DC United is enters the playoff run, likes to see this kind of thing from players like him, where he can show his contribution. And it was a very nice goal. And you know, besides the fact that their opponents were incredibly well named and have one of the most creative names probably in the CONCACAF Champions League, you know, this is a tough game for DC United going in. You know, anytime you go CONCACAF Champions League match on the road, it's tough to get 8 points, much less 3. And as we all know, from following this tournament, winning at home is essential. If you don't win your matches at home, you're done. And so I think that that's why we saw the kind of the match we did, which was fairly evenly matched. I think DC, well, I know DC United brought more of a second team down there and held their own, which was very impressive. And you know, this was the kind of match where I think it was a testament to both teams and a testament to the tournament. Just overall a competitive match, and I think DC United was, I don't want to say lucky, but you know, they had a little bit of luck on their side to get out of here with 3 points and really grab hold of this group.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you can say they were lucky because I'll be honest with you. I thought Arabia Unido was going to be a very, very tough opponent. They have solid players, obviously. Probably a couple of them are on their national team for Panama, but still, I thought that Andrew Dykstra, who has been at times hit or miss, I thought he had a much better match in this Champions League tilt than he's probably had in MLS.
Yeah, he certainly had a better CONCACAF Champions League match this time around than he did earlier in the season. Yeah, you know, I think that's the interesting thing about Andrew Dykstra. Obviously, with DC, Bill Hamid is the number one keeper, no doubt about it, no questions asked. Thank you very much. Good night. But, you know, Andrew Dykstra, if you go back in his history, coming up earlier in his career, he was very highly thought of as a very talented prospect, and that didn't pan out necessarily. Spent some time with, I believe, Charleston and some other teams in the lower leagues. And, you know, now he's getting a little bit more playing time with DC. Bill Hamid did have an injury a couple months, you know, months ago where Dykstra got some playing time. And I think he's showing himself that he has the potential to be a pretty solid keeper at the MLS level. And, you know, in a tournament like this, where you're probably not going to see Bill Hamid necessarily in some of these matches, it's pretty important for DC to have a keeper like Dykstra who can come in and be solid. You know, in low scoring affairs like this, you need to be able to rely on your keeper. And as I said earlier, well, I guess in last year's tournament, earlier this year, he showed that he was in no way capable of keeping goal in a CONCACAF Champions League match. But you know, this kind of performance gives, I think, a little bit more confidence to DC, especially in a back line that you know, you had some playing time, you know, players that had some playing time in there, but it was still a pretty green back line, especially at the fullbacks. And his ability to play so well is encouraging. So you got to like that. And you know, you never want Bill Hamid to go down with an injury because when you're talking about one of the best keepers in the league, there is no replacement for that, but you've got to feel a little bit better that the number two, if needed in a pinch, can at least perform and you have a little bit of confidence in him.
No, absolutely there. And you're talking about that back line being very green. Let me ask you this. Is it something that, obviously, like you said, Ben did not bring down the full squad, obviously. He kept a couple of people back up in our nation's capital. Obviously, you don't want to disrespect the tournament as well, but if I can ask you this, how much confidence did Ben Olsen show these guys, like Jalen Robinson, obviously Steve Birnbaum, Luke Mishu? We know Kofi Apari is regular on your back line, but still, just to insert these kids that have probably shown a lot during training, how important do you think he's brought the confidence into these kids in this big, big matchup?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a no-brainer. I think when you look at DC United's schedule, it's something that had to be done. You know, DC has a match tomorrow against San Jose, which is going to be a tough affair. And then, you know, they have the return, or they have the home CONCACAF Champions League match on Tuesday of next week, followed up by a Sunday match against a certain team from New York. So, you know, this is getting to the point where the schedule is getting very congested. And not only is it congested, you know, these are important tournaments. The Champions League is important, obviously, but so is, you know, gunning for the Supporters' Shield and a good playoff spot in MLS. So the ability, the fact that you have to, I mean, you almost have to if you're DC United, even though this would be, this is a tough match, you have to send a certain number of second and third string players down there just to keep your players fresh for the MLS matches. And the thing about the way it's set up for DC is, you know, they had a couple of players that needed game time that are potential first team players, Marcus Halsty, a Farfan, and guys like that who got playing time in this match. I mean, Aguilar arguably could challenge for significant minutes off the bench. You know, guys like this were able to get some playing time in this match and have some quality. And I think that's a real value to DC United, is to see guys like that get in this and play in a tough environment and play well. I mean, Marcus Halsty, if you ask any DC United fan that's been following the team this year, he's kind of a tantalizing talent. You know, came over from Europe, has a little bit of lower level Champions League experience from his national, you know, from his team over there. And, you know, he's a smart player. He can play at the back line. He can play midfield. He can creep up a little bit, but he's got a good presence about him, and he's got some talent. So to be able to see him play a match like this, even though he had to move to the back line, it sounds like due to injury, possible injury to Steve Birnbaum, I think that's a very positive thing for this team. And I think that's exactly what Ben Olsen wanted to see out of his squad, you know, and also to see Farfan, who is the, I guess the cause of that goal with his nice little pass there. I think that's very encouraging for DC United fans to see him play well up the middle as well. And I would like to note that Ben Olsen had to watch this game via, I'm assuming, the Fox Soccer feed, because he was suspended for this match. So longtime assistant Chad Alston was down there marshaling the team. It made me wonder, you know, during this match, did he have to pay for the subscription to watch the match? Did he get an illegal feed? I don't know, but I think this match turned out pretty, assuming Steve Birnbaum isn't really hurt. I think it turned out as well as you could have hoped for from DC. Not a great game, but you know what? Good enough to get 3 points and get some players in game shape.
Now, let me ask you this on a whole with DC. Because of certain results, and they've gotten, you know, some solid results, except, I mean, I'm not going to poo-poo the 6-4 victory over Real Salt Lake. Of course, that was one of those rare MLS games where you're going to get 10 goals out of the blue Knights, you know. But are you feeling a little nervous with DC at the moment, with not so much the results, but the performances of these games?
Yeah, undoubtedly. I mean, there's a ton of statistics out there about, you know, how many times DC United's had to come back from a deficit to win or draw a game. I mean, I'll give Chris Webb, our buddy, a really hat tip on this one. He pointed out the stat on his podcast that I think it was an MLS record. You know, DC United became the first team to come back from consecutive 2-0 deficits to get results, to get wins. And you know, you can't play with fire like that too often, especially when it comes around playoff time. So the fact that the team needs to kind of figure out what it wants to do in terms of tactics and in terms of, you know, strategy coming into games is important. I will point out the team is constantly having to shuffle its starting lineup due to injuries and performance. So it's been hard to get everybody on the field at the same time. And that probably plays into it a little bit. But I think another part of it is mentality. You know, this team tends to play very conservatively at times and think you could turn it on and score goals. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But you know, the other factor for DC United is, and you know, you see some of its depth in a match like we did this week, but you know, this team is not one that will ever have, maybe not ever, but at least in the short term, ever have star power. So when you see teams like New York City FC, Red Bull, Toronto, you know, with all of these stars, DC United has to rely more on its established MLS veterans and its system in order to win. And so if you're a DC United fan, you have to be nervous about injuries. You have to be nervous about performance. You have to make sure that Fabian Espíndola is healthy at all times, because he really is the engine that drives this offense. And there's very little room for error with this team. So it's good to see in a CONCACAF Champions League performance like this one, you know, that there's some depth that can come in and contribute, and we have players rounding into form at the right time. But I think it's based on, you know, results outside of this at MLS and some individual performances that, yeah, if you're a DC United fan, you are feeling a little bit nervous about how this season's going to end and what's going to happen in the playoffs.
Did you like the deal to bring over Saborío from Salt Lake and send Luis Silva over there, or you wish Silva was still with DC?
No, you know, Silva was just, you know, we talk about injuries with DC United, and, you know, Silva's a prime example of that, you know, flashing, you know, great talent, but constantly injured. And with this team, I mean, it truly did need a little bit more consistency up front. Saborío brings that, you know, he brings a veteran presence. His numbers were down over the past couple of years, but I think with him and Espíndola up front, I think that's a really good working combination. You know, he brings more of a physical presence up top that I think DC was lacking a little bit. And it seems like it's a, I mean, I know they have to pay at least part of his salary. I don't know, remember how much of it, but, you know, it seems like a low risk deal in terms of, you know, they're not stuck with him for the next 5 years or so. So it's a very good low risk, decent reward kind of pickup. And that's what DC United's been thriving on these past few years. You know, you think about Chris Rolfe, for example, was unwanted by Chicago. DC comes in and scoops him up, and they get players like Bobby Boswell on the veterans drafts. And you know, DC has a tendency the past couple of years to be pretty good at finding these MLS veterans who can contribute. And then it's what they have to do. I mean, financially, they can't compete with most of the other teams in the conference and in the league. And they have to find these hidden gems within the league itself.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you there. So let me throw this out at you, because, as you know, to get to this, or at least to get to the Champions League last time around, you had to win the Open Cup. But the league season back in 2013, DC was probably at their lowest point in their history with such a terrible, terrible league season record. Isn't it amazing? Because Ben Olsen found ways to keep the spirits high, to keep everyone thinking positive, even though it was a terrible losing season in MLS. And now you're hearing reports out of Chicago, Frank Yallop, is losing the locker room with the Fire, and at the same time, it sounds like he's just not interested in coaching. I mean, that's the rumors I've been hearing. Can you say that's a testament to what Ben Olsen has been doing at DC United ever since he got the job?
Yeah, you know, I think the advantage you have with somebody like a Ben Olsen is the fact that he's a former player, and he really instills his gritty attitude on the team. Now, there are disadvantages to that. I mean, I think you've seen at times he overlooks probably more talented players because they don't have that grit and that heart and determination. And, you know, they'll get benched or not play over a player who's not as talented, but they try harder, so they get more playing time. You know, you look at somebody like Connor Doyle, who is lacking a lot of talent but has that grit and determination, so he gets more playing time than maybe he should otherwise. So there's a downside to that, but the positive to that is you've got someone who you know, has been with the team forever. You know, he bleeds black and red. He's a smart soccer guy. He learned from, you know, Bruce Arena and some other really smart soccer minds. And I think that gives DC a little bit of an advantage. I think once they realized after 2013 where they needed to go and how they needed to build this team, they really were able to put something together that's been successful. I mean, they're not sexy. They don't have the big names. They don't have, you know, they're never going to be MLS poster boys, at least not in the near future.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you there. All right there, Robert. Thanks a lot for joining me again today. I'll talk to you next week, same time. Isn't it weird? DC United, they got four consecutive matches, and you get October off.
Hey, you got to get ready for the playoffs somehow, I guess.
Exactly. All right, Robert, I'll talk to you soon. Take care, my friend.
Sounds good.
All right, that's Robert Hay from World Soccer Talk, of course, as we talk about DC United defeating Arabe Unido in the CONCACAF Champions League. They're off to a good start. And, of course, continuing their group stage games is, of course, my next guest coming on very shortly. That fantastic comeback victory for the Seattle Sounders in that 2-1 victory over Olimpia of Honduras, as waiting for my good friend Dave Clark from Sounder at Heart to call in and to give us his opinion about that match. And once again, just to say, that was probably one of the I think that was one of the best games, you know, in this Champions League that I've seen so far. And it's just been absolutely unbelievable to see what has happened during those games. And you just got to say that it was awesome to watch. It really was. And joining me right now is Dave Clark from Sounder at Heart. Dave, I got to say, you know, and we'll try, we just lost him. We'll try and get him back. We'll try to get him back, and hopefully we'll get him back as we talk about the Sounders again. Once again, it was just an awesome game just to see them fighting back when they were down that goal by Olimpia on that second attempt. Obviously, it was during the same time where that free kick was given, and then all of a sudden it just came out of the blue that second opportunity as the ball was deflected away. And then Olimpia got on the board early in that matchup against the Sounders. And that was an early goal in the fifth minute as we continue to wait for Mr. Dave Clark as we get set here once again. But once again, you just got to say it was a great matchup. And you just have to say that was a big win. Very, very big win for the Sounders to get those big 3 points at home, or else probably Olimpia will steal a point and head home happy. So it's just, once again, one of those situations where for the Sounders, you know, they had to get the three points. And we'll just have to wait and see what's going to happen. But obviously, we'll just have to wait and see about Dave, and we'll have plenty of time. He's running a little late, of course, but he'll give us a phone call, and we'll wait for him to yep. So how about this? So we're just getting some information from Dave. He'll be on in about 10 minutes. So how about this? Let's just go ahead and talk about the LA Galaxy right now. In their second matchup. And against Comunicaciones. As Dave Clark will get with us in about 10 minutes. So that's even better. So we'll not worry about that. So let's go straight over to that LA Galaxy matchup. And then Dave Clark will give us a call. You know, once again, the Galaxy off and running. Once again, two wins, both at home, 5 goals scored in both games. They did concede a goal in their first matchup against the club from Trinidad and Tobago, Central FC, a 5-1 victory against them. And then, of course, in the second game, it was a 5-0 victory. But we'll see. Once again, it's just been absolutely incredible to see what they've been doing. Once again, Mika Vajarinen, who gets it in the fifth minute, the opening, the scoring, and then Alan Gordon on a, let's just say it's been a great, on a great gaffe from the goalkeeper in Juan Paredes Guzman of Comunicaciones, who was able, just to say, whoops, my bad, but what are you going to do? And then all of a sudden, Alan Gordon in the 54th minute gets his second goal of the match to make it 3-0. And then, of course, Robbie Keane gets two goals in a span of 3 minutes to basically just put this game to bed. Actually, this game was already put to bed when Alan Gordon got his brace. But Robbie Keane wanted to be, get back into the party. Just absolutely unbelievable stuff from the Los Angeles Galaxy, and they win this one by a final of 5-0. So you just got to say, for the Galaxy, once again, Galaxy are in there, boy. I'll tell you, the Galaxy are in there. And I think they're already going into the knockout stage. I think they're heading back to the knockout stage. They'll definitely be in the quarterfinals. There's nothing Central or Comunicaciones are going to do. Obviously, they have to fight against each other next, but then again, they have to host the Galaxy, and all the Galaxy really need are probably a draw here and there, because if you can get a draw here and there on the road, which is probably what they only need. If they get a win, fine. I mean, 9 points, it's all over, basically. But I really think the Galaxy are in there. There's really nothing much more to talk about or to say. I think the Galaxy are definitely going to be in the knockout stage when we get to October, just to finish off these things. And it's just been unbelievable to watch what's going to happen in some of these games. But like I've said before, the situation is very, very simple. Win all your games as much as you can. Score as many goals as possible, because even goal differential, whether it is going to be on the road or at home, I mean, everything is on the line in the CONCACAF Champions League. And you really wish that you would think that, or you hope that, you would really, really hope to see something like this happen for your clubs, whoever's in the CONCACAF Champions League. Either you win the Open Cup, you win the Supporters' Shield, winning MLS Cup, or the first place side that does not win the Supporter Shield. We'll see what happens. But the thing is that you just hope. You just hope that your side will get it, will go through, and just do everything possible that you can. But once again, the situations are very, very simple. You just got to see what's going to happen when your side is going into these situations. You just got to go out there, you got to perform, you got to play strong, you got to play tough, and that's what is basically in front of you. That's what's basically in front of you. But all I have said, all I've said, though, everyone knows what you got to do to go forward and try to play the best that you can. And, you got to make sure there's a priority in you to play these games and to do excellent in these games. And that's a credit to obviously Seattle, to DC. Look at the Galaxy. They've destroyed their opponents. And, it's been a long time since an MLS side or American club has lifted the Champions League trophy. Actually, to be honest with you, they've never lifted the Champions League trophy. The only club that, on the American side of things, that have come that close, of course, Real Salt Lake. Just that one aggregate goal at home that they conceded lost them the title. Obviously, Montreal last year for Canada, they got blitzed at home by a very, very talented Club America side. So obviously, it all depends on who you're going to face, how you're going to face them, and what will you do when you take these types of teams on, when you get not only in the group stage, but when you get to the knockout stage. Because, you know, if you look at this right now, if you look at the situation, if you look at the situation, once again, Club America, Santos Laguna, those are the two sides, I believe, right now, in my opinion, are where those are the two sides that will gain the advantage right now, winning the Champions League. I don't know what Vancouver is going to do. We still have three games left to see what they're going to be able to do for representing Canada. But other than that, I think Club America is still the favorites to repeat. I think Santos Laguna is also a favorite right now. But we'll see how these things will be handled when we go deeper and deeper into the group stage of the CONCACAF Champions League. Other than that, it's been all right. I think it's been a great start. And everything that's gone on from within CONCACAF, and we'll just continue to say this, what has gone on internally with CONCACAF, especially with what happened with Jeffrey Webb, with his involvement in these issues, you know, it's amazing to see how CONCACAF was able to have their Champions League draw in downtown Miami, because I thought they probably weren't going to broadcast it, to be honest. But they did, and it's a good thing they did, because I'll be honest with you right now. Gotta say that right now, everything that's been going on so far, I think it's been okay. You're going to get, of course, you know, Gold Cup questions that have already happened with the officiating. And, you know, we're not going to get into that. But definitely, definitely, what I've seen so far from some of these games, I think we're seeing better officiating during these Champions League matches than we are during the Gold Cup. Because the Gold Cup games, I mean, some of these officiating decisions were just downright disgusting. Sometimes you just wish, and to be honest, sometimes you just wish that officiating would be up to par. Now, I have to say this about that Sounders Olympia match. I thought the officiating was great. I thought that official was actually on top of everything. He called everything right down the middle. Mexican referee Jose Penaloza, I thought he called a great match between the Sounders and Olympia. I don't think there was any form of shenanigans whatsoever. Nothing going on. I just believe he called a great match. He just called a great match. I didn't have an issue with what he did. And to be honest with you, he was by the book. If you are going to continue to pretend that you're injured, if you're going to continue to pretend that you're not able to walk because of a slight touch, he will, and I'm talking about the referee, he will add on extra time to the added time. He'll add some more. Why? Because apparently one side wanted to just keep on trying to waste time. So if you're going to keep on wasting time, what the referee did, once again, Mr. Jose Penaloza, I thought what he did was absolutely correct. Because you want referees not to have an ego, at the same time to properly interpret the laws of the game. You want referees to interpret properly the laws of the game, because if they're not going to do that, then you've got an issue. And we've seen it many, many times many, many times where referees do not interpret the laws of the game properly. That goes with any referee from any country from within the continent, or excuse me, the Confederation of CONCACAF. We've seen that done with referees from Africa, from Asia. We've seen it done, some referees from Europe. We've seen some referees from South America. It's something that needs to be stopped, and it's stuff that we need to see referees being re-educated on the laws of the game. It has to stop. They need to be re-educated. If they are re-educated, then maybe we'll get better officials. But the truth of the matter is this. The shenanigans needs to stop. Because that's the only way we'll get better officials. And that's the only way things will improve. And they have to. Or else, once again, we're going to get what happened with Panama during the Gold Cup, saying CONCACAF thieves when they got eliminated by Mexico on the penalty spot, even though, you know, I've always praised Mark Geiger. I thought he had a horrible match to officiate because he was usually very good. It just was not a good match for him that time. And I really, really thought that he could have been a little bit better. So, obviously, hopefully things will get fixed again with Geiger, and we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens there, but hopefully everything will be fine, everything will be okay. And I believe we got Dave Clark on from Sounder at Heart to talk about that thrilling matchup. Dave, how are you, and how's it going?
It's going better now that I got off that dang bus. Sorry about that earlier.
Well, yeah, I know those rides are terrible, especially in New York City, man. Those bus rides are terrible. But I got to say this. What was great now, I have to tell you, I thought that was probably the best comeback victory. It doesn't matter what type of match it was. I thought that was a great comeback victory for the Sounders. And I really saw some great moments there, especially even though they gave up the first goal early on. Just the fight was tremendous.
Yeah, it was one of those kind of storybook kind of things, you know, like a Disney movie could write that script. They dominated but struggled for so long. Everything but scoring was in their favor. You got two of the beloved veterans in central midfield, Eric Freeberg and Brad Evans, come on to try to rescue the day. And eventually they do, but they do it in such a dramatic fashion. It was exciting. It was a thrill to be able to watch that live. It's not something that you get to see very often. I actually didn't watch the penalty kick. There was no way I was gonna subject myself to that kind of torment. I just buried my head in my hands, wrapped the scarf around my face, and just waited for the crowd's reaction. So for those like 3 minutes where the fools from Olympia were time-wasting and taunting and all that, I didn't see it until I watched the replays and whatnot and the highlights, but eventually, you know, you feel the passion of the fans, and that when that showered down on me, it was one of the greater thrills that I've had for a club that I've watched win trophies, but that victory was a thrill.
Oh, it definitely was. You know, I got to give Freiberg a lot of credit because I know that the players from Olympia were yelling for the flag for offside. But the truth of the matter is, when the ball was crossed and played, he was actually in an onside position. There's no way he's offside there. He found his way to get wide open. They didn't even find him, and he heads it in. I mean, he was well onside.
Those Olympia players should understand that you can't be offside on a throw-in. And you can't be offside on a deflected ball on a throw-in. An offensive player never touched it, so he can't be offside.
Yep.
The only way he could be offside is if Brad Evans had made that touch. Brad didn't. The Olympia player did. That's why there's no assist. If there was an assist on the play, then Olympia would have something to stand on. It wouldn't be strong. But they'd have something to stand on that. There's absolutely no way he was offside. Seattle's done that before. They like to put players in what would be traditionally considered offside positions on throw-ins because, frankly, there are enough players that don't pay attention to the rules that you can get away with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And like we said already, it was a legal play, onside. I didn't have a problem with it. Don't understand why Olympia players had a problem with it. And then all of a sudden, you get the penalty call where the tackle was definitely from behind. It was definitely inside the box. And they're still complaining about why wasn't the whistle blown. Well, the reason why is simple. They just kept on diving, faking injury, just staying down. Mm-hmm. And the point is, it's fairly simple, is that if you don't do that, then the referee will blow his whistle after 4 minutes of added time. It's really simple like that. The tackle from behind was terrible. It was a scissors tackle. To be honest with you, the defender's lucky he didn't get red carded and suspended for the next match in the Champions League, because that was a terrible challenge. And he coughed up the penalty. And you know what? Go ahead about Brad Evans, because you know what? I don't blame him for losing his cool.
No, and I don't know that he lost his cool. All he did was the same thing that their keeper had been doing, which was taunt the other team. And so he gave the "Are you not entertained?" That's not an absurd celebration. Are you not entertained? Are we really going to start carding people for that? If we are, we're ridiculous. So he did "Are you not entertained?" and looked at the keeper. The keeper then kicked the ball at him, which kicking the ball at a player is technically a yellow card. We've seen that many, many times. Plus, in that situation, it's technically time-wasting. Time wasted by the team that's down, even. So when you look at that, he didn't do anything wrong. He then received several punches from players from CD Olympia, as did Lamar Nagel. And, heck, their coaching staff and their bench stormed the field. Some of their bench players were some of the ones throwing punches. One of their bench players headbutted a dude. So hopefully CONCACAF, if CONCACAF supposedly suspended Mark Geiger for making bad calls, hopefully they suspend some CD Olympia players from their Champions League, because their players were violent. They were throwing punches. There's nothing else that can be said about that. They were violent people who deserve to never play in Champions League again.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't expect to see it, but the truth is that's what they were. It's CONCACAF, so we won't see it. But we should see it.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you there, and that was absolutely terrible. But outside of the shenanigans that was going on, just great fight from Seattle. Just kept on going, kept on, you know, setting up chances after chance after chance. I mean, a couple I thought they were going to go in. We do have to give some credit, of course, to the keeper of Olympia, Noel Valladares, who's probably Honduras' starting keeper. But I got to say, great fight from Seattle, just great going. And currently 4 points at the top of the group right now. Obviously three ahead of Vancouver in your group. And when the draw was made, were you excited to see that Vancouver was actually going to be drawn in your group?
No, I wanted an easy group. I don't want an MLS. You know, with these new three-team groups, one group is going to suck, and that's the group that gets the Canadian team. The rest of the groups are basically custom-built for MLS or Liga MX to make it through. Now, that didn't happen last year, but that's how the groups were set up. That's the whole reason they moved to three-team groups, was essentially to favor the United States and Mexico. So I wasn't excited for it. I don't need... We faced Vancouver 4 times in USL play, 3 times in regular season play, twice in CCL play, and we're probably going to face them twice again in the playoffs. That's a little too much, no matter how good the rivalry is. I mean, that's getting into Real Madrid and Barcelona territory, and I don't want anything to do with that. I'd much rather just face them twice. Twice in the regular season, twice in USL play, and done. Mm-hmm. That'd be good for me. I wasn't excited for it. I'm glad that we stole the point on the road there, got the away goal. That was important. Got 2 points in this one against Olympia, and are really set up now, because both of those games were essentially like third teams from Seattle. And so Seattle got 4 points, managed to get rest and or an extra couple weeks of health and relaxation for guys like Clint Dempsey. And so now
Seattle set up to go on the road to Honduras, and if they get 0 points there, they're okay. They're still in control of their own destiny. If they get a road goal and 0 points, they're even better off. The risk that Siggy took with his lineup was the right call, and it sets him up perfectly because he's in control of his Champions League destiny.
Absolutely agree with you there. Now you got this big matchup next week against the same Olympia side. You're going to go down to Honduras and take them on again. You know they're looking for revenge. Obviously, they're looking for revenge on the Sounders after that fantastic finish. And the real question is this. What do the Sounders need to do to play in this road match? I mean, I have to ask the question, will we see Obafemi Martins? By the way, I'm glad he's back from the DL. I'm glad he's back from the injury list, that he's going out there, he's back in league play, and he's scoring goals like he's always been doing. Does Obafemi Martins go down with the Sounders and play in this match? Does Clint Dempsey play in this match? Because I think you're going to need some extra oomph into this road match next week.
Clint Dempsey is not going to go down there. Oba might be in the 18, but I don't think you start him. And I don't think you start the new DP, Nelson Haedo Valdez, as well. What you're likely to see is a little bit more experience from on the field with a player like Ramon Torres, the new Panamanian center back that joined the Sounders just after the transfer window closed. Or Gonzalo Pineda will start again to again do that. O'Neill Fisher, who's a Jamaican player who's played on their U23 squad, you'll see him. You'll see some people with players with CONCACAF experience, but Seattle doesn't need to risk injury to their vital players. They're still on the playoff bubble, on the right side of the playoff bubble in MLS, but they're still on that bubble. Getting those 4 points means that they don't need to risk their top talents on the road in Honduras. Instead, what they can become is a floppy team, kind of like Olympia was, and go down easily, hope for those calls, and just understand that they're there to try and get a 1-1 draw. Because a 1-1 draw on the road in Honduras would be a huge victory, not just morally, but would put them at 5 points with two away goals, both against an away goal against each team. If they do that, nobody else is going to be able to. Vancouver has passed to take away the advancement from them. But if they get the 1-1 draw or a 2-2 draw, they're pretty much, in all reasonable scenarios, they're going through.
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoy this, you. I enjoy hearing your excitement in your voice, man. You sound, you're still pumped after that one. You sound great.
Yeah, you didn't talk to me during those two dire months that we faced out here. Then I wouldn't have been excited. But you could, you know, in MLS play, we got a 4-0 win against Orlando, got that amazing 2-1 win. Those are the types of things that you want to see. Those are the types of things that you expect as a Sounders fan at this point. You want to be challenging for trophies. They're back to that, and they're doing that even without Clint Dempsey and Osvaldo Alonso, a new signing, Andre Stevenship is not yet in the 18. So this lineup lacks Leo Gonzalez even. So you continue, you look down, and of their 18, they're re-energized and whatnot, but they're still down 3 or 4 key players. And those are guys, Marco Papa is just coming back as well. So you look at that, Leo Gonzalez, Marco Papa, Osvaldo Alonso, and Clint Dempsey, all guys that won the Supporter Shield last year and currently aren't even in the 18 for the Sounders. So it's a really exciting time. They look to have the type of depth that should go far in the Champions League, and they'll still make the playoffs, which is really what it's all about in the regular season.
Absolutely. It's going to be a fun stretch drive in the league season, and it should be interesting to see what the Sounders will do next week. Hope to have you back on again next Friday. And listen, thanks again for your patience. I'm sorry about the technical difficulties. Really wanted to have you on 2 weeks ago. But listen, thanks for coming back on, and talk to you next week, okay?
Yeah, next week let's go as planned. We'll have no technical difficulties, and the bus won't be in trouble.
Exactly. Take care, Dave, and thank you very much again.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. That's Dave Clark from Sounder at Heart. Big victory for the Seattle Sounders at home. Comeback victory. Once again, a 2-1 victory for Seattle over Olympia of Honduras as they get a big, big 3 points at home. Joining me now to talk about those clubs in Liga MX, of course, my friend John Jagu, who covers Liga MX and Mexico's national team on Big Soccer. John, welcome back, and how are you?
Hey, Daniel. Good evening.
Good evening. So, you know, you just got to – let me ask you this question before we start talking about these three matches with these clubs involved. Is it weird or at least an honest assessment that Santos Laguna and Club America are probably the two favorites coming out of Liga MX to win this edition's tournament?
Well, I mean, I would probably want to add Tigres to that too. I mean, I know that they're playing with, you know, with their quote-unquote second team, but I think that once as the tournament gets a little deeper, they're going to want to start using some of their A-listers because they have quite a collection of players. But, you know, I mean, obviously I think they're the favorites. I think Santos, you know, they had another coaching change. They lost Caixinha, who decided to, I think he must have gotten an offer from a Portuguese team because, you know, his every intention was to go back to Portugal. So I think that, you know they're certainly, you know, I would probably consider Tigres more of a favorite than Santos just because I think they have a little bit better team. But at Club America, I mean, you know, it's they got a new coach. It's a guy who really hadn't done all that much on some of the smaller teams. You know, a former defensive midfielder, a guy by the name of Nacho Ambriz, who played with the Club America general manager back in the mid-90s on Necaxa, which what I would probably consider the last, certainly the last dynasty of the long season format that Mexico had. And just you know, a really good player for a long time, you know, played in the World Cup, was, you know, started, you know, four games in the World Cup in 94. Good guy, you know, time will tell to see if he's a good coach or not. I think that, you know, he, again, you know, certainly has a talent. And, you know, so I think that, you know, those, if I were to rank the three teams as far as who would be the favorite, I'd probably say America and Tigres or would be one and two, and then Santos would be third.
Yeah, I'll go with that. Definitely.
Frankly, the Galaxy, I think, I think that would certainly, you know, certainly probably squeeze into the top three without, I don't think anyone will argue that either.
No, absolutely not. I mean, they've had a great start in this CONCACAF Champions League, basically going, well, 10 goals in two matches is just unreal and unheard of. But, you know, if anyone who's built right now in MLS for the CONCACAF Champions League, it definitely is the LA Galaxy. But let's go ahead in this first matchup. Tigres with two late goals in the second half to defeat Isidro Metapan 2-1. David Rugamas Leva, who gets the opening goal in the fifth minute, and then just some shrewd substitutions, I would say, by Ricardo Ferretti. And then here comes Alonso Zamora to level the match in the 84th. And Alonso, he gets his second one right off the bat, you know, after he scores his first 2 minutes later. I mean, that's just unbelievable stuff right there.
Yeah, and you know, the Metapan fans were, you know, and they played well. I mean, Tigres did not play well, and the Metapan fans, I'm sure, and you know, a lot of folks were hoping that they would get the victory, you know, which would be a huge upset. I mean, again, you know, I know that these guys didn't play, but I mean, Tigres has, you know, Gignac just got called up to France. You know, they got a couple of Mexican national team players. They've got a couple of, you know, there's a solid Uruguayan national. I mean, they have it. They're as stacked a team as you can have in this side of the world. I mean, they really do have a good team. But of course, none of those guys played because they, you know, they had just finished up. You know, Tigres had lost the championship in the Libertadores to River Plate. So, you know, it's interesting that they're playing, that they ended up playing both tournaments. But yeah, I mean, you know, Zamora, you know, it's another young kid that came in, and just when people think that it's gonna, you know, the history is gonna be made, you know, these these teams find a way, and you know, and I mean, I watched I actually got to watch the last 40 minutes of the game, and I mean, those goals, I guess the second one that he scored, I mean, that was just you know, it's a very cheeky goal, and I'm sure that the Metapan, you know, it's just something that you're not expecting. And you know, it's like when, you know, if you're at a, you know, watching a football game, or I guess like a baseball game, and losing on like the hidden ball trick. I mean, it was almost that kind of goal. You know, you just kind of poked it through in the near post on a corner kick, and you know, took everyone by surprise. And you know, I think, you know, Tigres will qualify without any issue. You know, Club America had a really tough game against Nicaraguan side, which of course in Mexico was taken as what is going on. They had a side that was, you know, full of reserves. It was kind of a half and half side. They're playing a Nicaraguan team. It's at the Azteca. How could you only win 1-0? And I did a little research actually, because I mean, I was really impressed with, you know, I'm going to call him Ricardo Ferretti, but I know that's not right. It's
Walter Ferretti. Yeah.
Walter Ferretti. Yeah.
Walter.
Yeah, yeah. Ferretti. Ferretti's been a big name in the news this week, but So Walter Ferretti and them winning the Nicaraguan championship. They played 36 games and conceded only 13 goals in those 36 games. That's pretty good. That's giving up a goal every three games. So I knew that they were going to be stout defense. And sure enough, I mean, it wasn't like they were like, you know, just desperately defending. I mean, they defended well, and then they resolved better. I mean, they were able to get their ball. Now that they couldn't attack very well, but they were able to get the ball from out of their own end, and just which meant that Club America just could never. You know, they couldn't break them down in on their end of the field, and you know, credit to Club America. I mean, they didn't panic; they knew that it would come eventually, and they got the goal in the second half. You know, again with Michael Arroyo scoring outside the area, it was a good goal. I mean, you know, people are going to look at that and say, how on earth could Club America, you know, only win 1-0 the Nicaraguan team at the Azteca? I mean, that was a good team. If I were the Nicaraguan national team coach, I would look at that defense and go, you know what? If I could get just any kind of offense and have those guys be my, I think that Nicaragua could, and I'm not sure where they are. I mean, I'm guessing they're already eliminated, but they would be a great base to build a CONCACAF team. You know, maybe for the next Gold Cup qualifying, and then beyond in the next World Cup qualifying. I think that they could be a real. I think that team impressed me so much. I think that it's one of those things where you see it's just going to be where Nicaragua, you know, becomes kind of a player, and you know, and in CONCACAF, in the sense that, you know, maybe they can, if for them qualifying for the Hex would be a huge accomplishment. You know, I mean, are they going to be able to do that? And I think that with the base players they have on that team, I think that's a very good possibility for them, because I came away really impressed.
Well, you know, John, Nicaragua was going to take on Jamaica in that third round at the beginning of next month. So.
They're still alive. Okay, I didn't realize if they were alive or not.
Yeah, yep. They're in the third round against Jamaica in the goal aggregate playoff, and then of course they'll be drawn in. They've been drawn in Group B in the semifinal group with Costa Rica, Panama, as well as the winners of either Grenada or Haiti. But you know, if he's listening to you right now, John, you know he should take your advice.
Well, you know,
you got a path. You should make some phone calls.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, any coach would be crazy not to go, oh, wait a second, this guy's only gave up 13 goals in 36 games, and just take, you know, if all four of them are Nicaraguan, just take all four of them and go, you're my defense. You know, do what you do, you know, for your club, and let's do it on the national team, and just, you know, and then they can build from there. I mean, I think it was definitely, because, you know, when you watch teams like that, when they defend, you know, they just desperately want to, you know, they'll get the ball away and then just, like, boot it 50 yards away. These guys were taking the ball away and then stringing some passes together, you know, making America defend, and then they would lose the ball. They weren't just like, you know, just knocking it wherever they could just to get away from the goal. So yeah, I think that's something that you know, for a modest team like Nicaragua, I think would be a huge benefit for them. And if they can get, you know, throw a couple of 18, 19-year-old kids that are, you know, incredibly fast, and you know, teach them a thing or two and hit them on the counter, they could make things very interesting for Jamaica if those guys end up playing on their national team. So who knows what happens?
Yeah, absolutely. And finally, now if I make a mistake, you can correct me. Querétaro, is that correct?
Get it? Querétaro.
Querétaro. Thank you very much.
Yeah, there you go.
Of course, being managed by the ever popular and the very, very very, very nice gentleman, Victor Vucetich, of course, trying to to reclaim his Champions League magic, what he did with Monterrey. A 0-0 draw on the road with Verdes FC. I don't know where they're from. Do you know where they're from?
They're in Belize. It was actually the first Champions League game played in Belize.
Okay,
you know
good.
I know, again, people were like, "Oh, how could you lose? How could you tie 0-0?" You know, honestly, you know, I'm kind of like Vucetic in the situation. Look, you know, we have chances to win at home. You know, get a tie on the road. That's great. I mean, I going to a place that you've never been before, and you know, I know what to expect. I mean, you know, there's no reason to take any unnecessary chances, and. So it didn't surprise me at all that they got. I don't know. I don't even know if the game was on TV, but I did not get a chance to watch. You know, just saw a couple of highlights, and you know, I mean, just like you said, I mean, it's Vucetic. I mean, he's a great coach. He's really turned. Okay, I thought his fortunes around. You know, they made the final last year against Santos. That didn't do so well in the final, but you know, he's got a couple of. Couple of young players, a couple of veteran guys. He's got a very nice mix of veterans and youth. And you know, Querétaro, I don't think that they, you know, I think that they'll definitely, you know, contend to make it to the quarterfinals. But I mean, you know, their kind of team based on who they're going to be seated up against. Yeah, I think it's going to be real, real hard for them to get past, you know, maybe the quarters or even, you know, definitely this, you know. Definitely the semis, and I'm not so sure that they're strong enough to get past the quarters, you know, mm-hmm. And of course he's dependent on chip and all, but it's Vucetic, so you never know. I mean, he's just I'm not going to call him a miracle worker, but just a really good coach, and he knows how to get the most out of his players, and you know, they're doing all right now in the league, and they're going to stick around because that's just how he plays, you know, they stick around and. You know, maybe they can get a goal or two, and they should be. You know, I know that. You know, I'm sitting here saying that they're not going to make it past the quarterfinals, but I sure wouldn't want to play them.
Oh, absolutely, I think. Yeah, absolutely, John. I agree with you. I mean, you don't want to play against this team managed by Victor Vucetic, who, you know, call me crazy, but do you think if he can pull something? I mean, this would probably be one of the greatest stories if he ever gets this club to where maybe you said that they're not going to get to, but they could. You never know. I mean, he's done some crazy things in the past.
Yeah,
I mean,
I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, Querétaro. I mean, it's a team that hadn't been around for very long. You know, they've come in and out and in and out of the first division over the past few years. I'm not going to lie to you. I think that. This is a different incarnation of a couple of Querétaros ago. I think that they were a team that got moved there and just assumed the name and the crest. It's Mexican soccer and the crest, et cetera. But you know, they have a good owner. You know, it's an owner that's willing to take the necessary steps to make his team competitive. Not necessarily just, you know, getting a bunch of players, but you know, giving them the opportunity. You know. Enhancing their training, you know, investing in scouting and finding the young kids. I mean, they have a couple of really, really, really talented, you know, 19, 20-year-olds that made it to the World Cup over the summer. So they have some players, and you know, again, I think the fact that they have a strong owner who's committed is going to help them a lot. They got a good coach, they got a great stadium, and you know, Querétaro is a nice little town. It's a colonial town, and it's very nicely located because it's up in the mountains. But it's between Mexico City and Guadalajara, so it's kind of a tweener town that's you know, got about between 1 million and 2 million people. So it's a good little market for him. It's perfect for Vucetic, honestly. It's a good little market for him, and he just can you know, do what he does best. And you know, and at the end of the year, though, oh my God, there they are. They're in the playoffs, and you know, like I said, we'll probably see them in the quarterfinals and. You know, it's you know, they don't have that kind of experience, but they certainly, like I said, I think it can really you know, be a headache for whoever ends up playing them.
Oh yeah, definitely. Because
they just scored a goal in their league game.
Are they playing tonight?
Yeah, they're playing Cruz Azul tonight, and they just went 2-0 with one of their veteran.
What?
Their veteran forward getting his head on the end of the ball and scoring. Yeah. So.
What against Cruz Azul? Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh my God. I think you know what it is with Vucetich. It's more like, you know. Let's put it this way. It doesn't. And I'm going to go with wrestling on this. It doesn't matter if it's WWE or Lucha Libre or whatever, or Mexican wrestling. He needs his own theme song to walk on the field, and just to get everybody excited. Because if the players are excited to be managed by him, I think the supporters of whatever club he's on, like Kit Retaro, you know, they should just, you know, shower him with like gifts and whatever. Because boy,
I'll tell you what, I think that he earned the respect of his players last year. Because they had Ronaldinho on their team last year, I guess last season.
Mm-hmm.
And he benched them a few times because, I mean, you know, Ronaldinho was there to, you know, I'm sure Querétaro has a nice nightlife, and, you know, a good scene at night, and that's really what Ronaldinho was there for. Well, that, the coach wouldn't have it. So he benched them a few times. He would, if he was being lazy, you know, out in the field, he would, he'd sub them in the first half. And I think that the players, and Ronaldinho was there for one reason only. He was there to sell tickets. You know, people wanted to come watch him play.
Right.
Vucetich was like, you know what, you know, he's part of a team, and if he doesn't do what we ask him to do, then he's not going to play. And Ronaldinho, to his credit, said, you know what, the coach is absolutely right. I said I was setting a bad example, and you know, I'm gonna, we talked about it. He said, and from now on, I'll make more of an effort. And sure enough, he did. He made more of an effort. And he came really close to tying their second leg of the final against Santos with Ronaldinho. It was just offside on a goal that he would have gotten. So it was it was a good way for Vucetich to show that yes, he is in charge, and I think the players appreciated that. And I think that, you know, he's the kind of guy that, look, if you just show me what you can do and if you show it to me consistently, I don't care if you're 19, I don't care if you're 17, I don't care if you're 35, you're going to play. And I think
yeah.
I think the players, you know, players really gravitate to that. I think that there's a certain, certain players will gravitate to that, and I'm sure he's a smart enough guy to pick those players, put them on his team. And I think that we're going to see, we'll probably see that. Not necessarily in the CONCACAF Champions, but definitely in the local league. I think the Querétaro is going to be, we can just call them Gallos because that's, they're the White Roosters. That's their nickname, so you can call them White Roosters if you want.
Yeah, it just sounds like, you know, whatever he does no wrong. Unfortunately, I'm not blaming him for his little stint with the FMF. I feel the FMF... Exactly. Because I feel that he was, let's just put it this way. I don't blame him for what happened those two games. I don't blame him for that. I blame basically the FMF for throwing him into a very volatile situation where it could have been curtains for Mexico not qualifying for Brazil. Or at least get to the playoff. I blame the FMF more because I don't blame Vucetich. I don't blame him at all.
Oh,
I just
think
it was a volatile situation.
I mean, and just the way that, I mean, they practically let him go like in a text. You know, it's like if you were, you know, that never happened to me, thank goodness, because the delay happened long after I was, you know, in that scene. But you know, it's like I mean, I heard that it's like getting dumped via text. I mean, that's pretty much what happened to him. They couldn't even do it to his face, and it was just terrible. And the worst part about it was, I mean, it wasn't as if, I mean, honestly, you think that Vucetich was going to have a problem trying to beat New Zealand? Just wasn't going to happen. You know, they were going to crush New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever was coaching, and then he would have, you know, he would have had the time to get things going. I mean, and he would have had a good World Cup. He'd probably still be the coach. I mean, that's just the way it is. And, it was unfortunate for him that it happened, but you know he's the kind of guy who's like, you know what, he's like, they treated me respectfully and, you know, respectfully to them, I will never work for them in any capacity, and he won't. I mean, he would have to Yeah, I mean, I know that there's no such thing as never, but it would definitely cost them a whole bunch of money.
Money and television rights and all that stuff.
Oh, well, he could definitely put his stipulations if they ever have to come to him. Which, you know, and frankly, you know, I'm not saying, you know, it's with the way that you know, as reactionary as they are, and as moody as international mm-hmm. teams get.
Mm-hmm.
No, there's no guarantee that Vucetic won't be at any point or will be coaching the team before the Russia World Cup. So
yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, obviously, I guess they're still searching. They have time before. Well, then again,
well,
I don't know.
They named an interim last night.
Okay.
It's going to be Tuca Ferretti. Coach, he's going to coach him for four games. He's going to coach him for these two friendlies coming up.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to coach him for the Blazer Bowl, and then they have like a friendly like that following game. Just like, who's going to want to play that?
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's got four games, and then he says, I'm done, and that's going to, you know, then they won't play another meaningful game until I think that they play Canada, I think, in Mexico I think it's Canada, and then they play at Honduras. So, you know, mm-hmm. thrown right into that. At least it wasn't Honduras first. I mean, that would be tough for any serving. Yeah. So the new coach will, in November, wherever that person may be, will get thrown right into the pit with
mm-hmm.
the qualifying match.
Yep. Yeah, it should be interesting. Actually, it is not the Blazer Bowl. It's actually the Jeffrey Webb Bowl because Blazer did not make that Confederation Cup playoff.
Yeah. I understand, but I mean, you gotta.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Pioneer.
Okay, you're absolutely correct.
It alliterates. It's better for marketing.
That's right. You're right. I'm not a marketing guy, so I'll go along with what you're saying.
Yeah.
I definitely
no, and,
agree.
You know, and Tuca is one of my. He's one of my guys. I mean, he was one of the stars of players on the team that I grew up watching
mm-hmm.
when I was a kid, and you know that was a fan of. So I've been a huge Tuca fan for you know over 30 years. I just love the guy.
Nah,
and,
don't blame you.
His style of coaching is not. I mean, he is totally different than most Mexican coaches. He's especially like for national. He's not possession driven. He is all about making sure that the other team doesn't score. That's what he cares about. And you know he so yeah it's you know it's gonna be a little different watching Mexico play under Tuca, so we'll see how that plays out.
Mm-hmm.
But
you know, yeah, absolutely. What I was gonna say is, speaking about with everything that's been going on with coaches, you know, with Miguel Herrera, unfortunately, the situation that happened in the Philadelphia airport, which. I'd like to believe that was kind of planned because, like you said, they wanted him gone, and they knew how to get him or get his goat. How do you like what Paolo Wanchope did in this under 23 friendly? That he had no credentials. He's sitting in the stands. He was going to go on the field because he didn't like something, and the security guard told him no, and he hits the security guard, and then he had to step down.
Yeah, it was, I mean, you know, it wasn't the best light for Mr. Wanchope at all. Now, you know, maybe, you know, I saw the video a little differently. I mean, first of all, it's like a common sense thing. I mean, the guy's the Costa Rica coach. You know, if you want to get down on the field, go talk to one of the Costa Rican officials who's got a badge and say, get me a badge or can I go with you? You know what I'm saying? Don't just, hey, I'm the Costa Rica coach. You got to let me know, you know. Now, and again, I've also been around very overzealous gate people that take their job very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you don't have a badge, they're not going to let you in. So there's, I mean, it's like a spirit of a law, letter of the law thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were both at fault. The guy didn't have to be all that aggressive with him. And
mm-hmm.
the little guy ended up pushing Wanchope first. And then Wanchope just, you know, he just responded. And, you know, unfortunately, the whole thing got caught in video. And because it was on video, then he has to go.
Yep.
So, and then, of course, it only took them like 3 days to hire a coach. They got the guy from Alajuelense, which I think you know would be good for them because you know they you know they've done pretty well.
Yep.
And yeah, but you know home with but now we got Tuca for 4 days. So, and another thing, he is incredibly entertaining press conferences. Cause,
really?
He was the guy. Yeah, he was the guy that years ago said that he would rather be a street sweeper than coach the national team. he was the guy that the coined the phrase partidos moleros, which I guess you know loosely translated means cash grabs, you know, just you know ridiculous cash grabs.
Right.
And no, he's a very colorful guy, and you know he's not the rumor is that he's doing this without getting paid.
Wow.
Yeah. So he just. You know they have the league has the weeks off in the games that he's doing, so I guess what he's going to coach the team during that week, and that's going to be that. And you know he's very strict. You can look him up in some of his YouTube stuff. I mean it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's one where he gets mad at the team because they're not doing a drill right, and the guy's like, let me show you how to do it. And he goes, he was a great player. He was a great player. He had a fantastic shot. I mean, he could score from 40 yards with ropes. I mean, the dude, he had an incredible leg. It was very impressive.
Awesome.
And he obviously stays in shape, and he's the only thing. Knowing how coaches get fired in Mexico, he has been coaching continuously. Now, for different teams, mind you, he's you know when
yeah.
contracts expired, he got picked up for 24 years. He has never. He's one of the few coaches that has never been fired.
Wow. That shows you, that really shows you how important he is to these clubs, even though they've never re-signed him. And they've never, never fired him. He was awesome.
Yeah, he's been with Tigres since 2010.
Oh, wow.
Either 2009 or 2010. Yeah, and it's 25th. I mean, and for a coach to last that long at a Mexican side, is incredible. And he won Tigres' first title back in 2011. There was their first championship since 1982.
Wow.
So, yeah, he's, you know, and again, it's not that he doesn't play the flashiest. He's very defensive-minded. It's his, you know, he likes to hit people on the counter and just
mm-hmm.
let them make mistakes. And, you know, he's not all gung-ho about possession, but he's gung-ho about stopping people. And, he's a very tactical guy. He will change formations based on what's happening in the game. He's just going to make the adjustments and just make his players, you know, they just have to do it. I mean, that's just, you know, the way he plays. And
I absolutely agree with
so
you.
It's a,
definitely.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. He's, you know, with a defensive-minded guy and with Mexico, with the speed they have, you know, on their front line with Chicharito and a couple other guys, Mexico's counterattacks, which is something that they don't ever really show, can be – extremely dangerous, and I think that when they have shown it, they usually get very close to scoring. So it should be. I think that people are going to be a little surprised with how Mexico ends up playing against teams.
Final question to you is this about the interim head coach. What type of broom are we going to see him carry out on the bench? Those regular brooms or the?
they have in Mexico. They have the brooms that are a broomstick, and then it's a bunch of twigs. You know, like you know, hundreds of them that are tied into a ball.
That's right.
Or tied into a cylinder and, you know, tied around the broom. And then, yeah, so that would probably be it. And, and, you know, that's the other thing is that he's such a grouch that, you know, we always joke that he has to do all those stupid commercials for FMF. They'd just be hilarious. So I'm thrilled for the guy, not in the sense that he's always, you know, his career's made. I'm glad that he's going to get – he never wanted to coach the team.
Yeah.
He was part of the 1994 coaching staff. He saw the inner workings of how, you know, the sausage is made, basically. And he's like, I don't ever want a part of that. Ever. I mean, he said it multiple times. So I think that what ended up happening was I think that they came to him and said, hey, man, we really want you to coach. They said, listen, you don't really want me. I don't want to do it, you know, on a full-time basis. But, you know, I'll come and help you out on an interim level. And then you take your time to find the guy you want, and then you know, we'll do these four games, and then in November you guys have your guy in place. So it's a very noble. I mean, if it's true, it's a very noble gesture, and makes me like Tuca. I mean, even more. I've always, you know, he's been one of my favorite guys for a very long time.
Yep. That's awesome to hear. John, thank you again so much. Hope to talk to you again soon next week. And I'll let you know your time. And have a good night. Take care.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Daniel. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's John Jagu from Big Soccer covering Liga MX as well as Mexico's national team. Thank you very much for listening to tonight's CONCACAF Champions League review show, week two in the group stage. I'm your host, Daniel Foyerstein. Talk to you on Monday. Have a good night. Enjoy your football. Bye-bye for now.